Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Grid Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Whiskey 8 Mike Whiskey, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. Yeah, I have many net controls this evening. I'm just merely opening it up. My call is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My name is Kathleen. I'm located in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, where we currently have a temperature of about 54 degrees. Tonight it's about ready to go down in the 30s. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, I ask you to come aboard. No emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. So anyone celebrating their birthday this week, last week, today, they'd like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy. All right, hearing no birthday stations, and as I always say, that means we're not getting any older. So once again, I want to welcome each and every one of you. This is the Thursday, the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TRN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and our other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Now, I want to advise all stations connected to this net. It will be recorded this evening and put on our website as a podcast, so all stations participating will be part of that recording. And as I said, this was a subject very dear to Gordon's heart, so I am glad that Dave decided to do this. The subject is why antennas matter more than your radio. So hopefully you enjoy the session this evening, and like I said, ask questions of those guest speakers. So with that, I'm going to throw it over to you, Dave, GW8SZL, for you to continue the program. Thanks for allowing me to open it this evening.
K6SUN from Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima. Thank you for opening it there, Kathy. Really do appreciate it, as always. Okay, ever wonder why some stations seem to leap across continents while others barely make it to the next town? The secret isn't in the radio, the power, or even fancy gear. It's actually in the antenna, the heart of your station. Now this evening, we're uncovering the mysteries of antennas, how they launch your signals, capture distant contacts, and even turn noise into clear communication. From simple tweaks to clever strategies, you'll discover how small changes can make a huge difference. So buckle up, because your signals are about to get smarter, your contacts farther, and your understanding of ham radio deeper than ever before. So let's dive in. First up this evening, we have Declan through Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, the kind young ham over here in Newport, South Wales. So Declan, to Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel from Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening, and welcome to one of the most fundamental and most misunderstood aspects of amateur radio. This section, and the sections that follow, are intended to be read aloud slowly and deliberately. If some ideas are repeated, that is intentional. Radio is not a visual medium, but understanding grows through reinforcement. Tonight we begin with a simple but powerful idea. The antenna is the heart of the amateur radio station. When most people imagine a radio station, they picture the radio itself. The transceiver sits on the desk. It has a display that shows frequency and signal strength. It has knobs that control volume, tuning, and filtering. It feels alive. When we turn it on, we hear the bands come alive. It is natural, then, to think of the radio as the core of the station. But from a functional standpoint, the radio is only a signal processor. It generates RF energy, and it processes RF energy that arrives at its input. Everything else, how that energy gets into the air, how it travels, and how much of it ever reaches another radio station, depends on the antenna system. The antenna is not an accessory. It is not an afterthought. It is the physical interface between your station and the rest of the world. To understand why this matters, consider what happens when you transmit. Inside the radio, electronic circuits generate an alternating electrical current at the frequency you have selected. That current flows out of the radio and into the feed line. Up to this point, everything is contained. The energy is confined to conductors. It has not yet become radio in the way that we usually think of it. The moment that energy reaches the antenna, something different happens. The antenna forces that electrical energy to interact with space itself. Electric and magnetic fields form around the antenna. Those fields detach and propagate outward. At that moment, your signal is no longer yours. It becomes a part of the electromagnetic environment. The radio cannot control this process. It cannot steer the signal. It cannot decide which direction it travels or how efficiently it leaves the antenna. All of those outcomes are determined by the antenna's physical properties and its environment. The same is true in reverse when you receive. Signals traveling through space encounter your antenna first, not your radio. The antenna intercepts a tiny fraction of that energy and converts it back into electrical currents. Only then does the radio begin to operate. If the antenna fails to capture that energy effectively, the radio has nothing to work with. This is why two stations using identical radios can have dramatically different on-air performance. The difference is almost always found outside the shack. Over time, many amateurs come to this realization through experience. They upgrade radios and notice only modest improvements. Then they change antennas, sometimes reluctantly, sometimes accidentally, and suddenly the station behaves very differently. Signals are stronger, noise is lower, contacts become easier, operating becomes more enjoyable. This moment is often described as an aha experience. It's the point at which an operator stops thinking of the antenna as a necessary inconvenience and starts thinking of it as the primary component of the station. Antennas, however, are challenging. They exist in the real world. They are affected by gravity, weather, corrosion, and physical stress. They must coexist with buildings, trees, power lines, and neighbors. They must obey laws, regulations, and practical constraints. Because of this, antennas resist simple solutions. There is no universal best antenna. There is no antenna that works perfectly everywhere. Every antenna involves trade-offs, and those trade-offs are unavoidable. This reality frustrates many operators, especially those who come to amateur radio from purely electronic backgrounds. Inside the shack, systems behave predictably. Outside the shack, they do not. But that unpredictability is not a flaw. It is a defining feature of radio. The antenna is where amateur radio stops being abstract and becomes physical. It is where theory meets dirt, metal, wood, and weather. It is where experimentation becomes unavoidable. In this evening's program, we will not attempt to eliminate that complexity. Instead, we will learn to understand it, work with it, and even enjoy it. And as we continue, keep the central idea in mind. The radio processes signals. The antenna determines which signals exist in the first place. Now in the next section we will slow down and examine exactly what antennas do, how they interact with space, and why their behavior is so sensitive to their surroundings. What antennas really do: energy, fields, and space. Now that we have established the antenna as the heart of the station, let's take a closer look at what it actually does. We are moving from metaphor and philosophy to physics, but we will keep this at a level that is intuitive and understandable without needing complex mathematics. The goal is to create a clear mental picture of how antennas work, both on transmit and on receive. An antenna is a boundary between your controlled station and the chaotic environment outside. On one side you have wires, circuits, and components, while on the other side you have free space, a medium governed by electromagnetic laws and waves. The antenna allows energy to transition from one realm to the other. When transmitting, your radio generates alternating electrical currents. Those currents travel along the feed line and arrive at the antenna. Here is the critical moment. The antenna converts electrical energy into electromagnetic waves that propagate outwards into space. At that instant, energy leaves the confines of copper and insulation and becomes part of the environment. It no longer belongs to you. It spreads outwards, bending, reflecting, and interacting with the world around it. Consider the analogy of a bell. Striking a bell produces vibrations in the metal that radiate sound waves into the air. The bell is not producing the air itself, but it is the device that sets the surrounding medium into motion. Without the bell, there is no sound. Just how likewise, without the antenna, there is no radio wave. Antennas operate on both transmit and receive, and their behavior is symmetrical in principle. On receive, the antenna intercepts electromagnetic waves passing through space and converts them back into tiny electrical currents. These currents travel down the feed line into the radio, where amplification and processing occur. The radio can only operate on what the antenna delivers. So if the antenna is poor at receiving, the radio is handicapped from the start. This brings us to an important insight. Antennas do not amplify or improve signals. They do not create energy. They shape and direct it. Any gain an antenna has comes from directing more energy in some directions and less in others. In other words, antennas redistribute energy rather than creating it. This principle applies to both transmission and reception. Another key factor is efficiency. Not all energy applied to an antenna is radiated. Some energy is lost as heat in conductors, in coils, in matching networks, or in the surrounding materials. Ground losses, nearby metal structures, trees, and insulation all absorb energy. A short wire antenna in a lossy environment may deliver only a fraction of the transmitter's power as actual radiated energy. Understanding efficiency helps explain why a full-size wire in a good location often outperforms a compact, seemingly perfect antenna tucked into an attic. Length matters. Radio waves have physical dimensions, known as wavelengths. Antennas that are properly sized for a given wavelength generally perform better because they support resonance and efficient energy transfer. A shortened or electrically loaded antenna can still work, but there is always a trade-off between size and efficiency. This trade-off often shows up as weaker transmitted signals, narrower bandwidths, or more complex tuning requirements. Height also matters. An antenna interacts with the ground in subtle and complex ways. A low horizontal antenna tends to radiate upward, producing energy at high angles that favor short-range communications. As the antenna is raised, the main radiation lobes flatten, sending more energy toward the horizon. This affects how far and effectively your signal travels. Even a modest increase in height can yield surprising improvements in both transmit and receive performance. Orientation and geometry matter. Antennas radiate energy differently based on their shape and positioning. A horizontal dipole has a different radiation pattern than a vertical quarter wave, and even bending or tilting the antenna changes how energy is distributed. Polarization, which describes the orientation of the electric field, also plays a role. Matching the polarization of transmitting and receiving antennas maximizes energy transfer. Mismatched polarization introduces losses, sometimes significant ones, depending on frequency and path. Finally, antennas are highly interactive with their environment. Nearby metal, wiring, gutters, trees, or even the feed line itself can alter current flow, resonance, and radiation patterns. This is why identical antennas installed in different locations can behave very differently. The antenna and its environment function as a single, inseparable system. Understanding antennas in this way reframes the way we think about our stations. It is not just the antenna itself that matters. It is the combination of antenna, height, environment, and placement. Small changes can have dramatic results. Moving a wire a few feet, raising it a few meters, or reorienting it slightly can improve performance far more than upgrading to a more expensive radio. In the next section, we will explore resonance, efficiency, and radiation patterns in more detail. We will see why a resonant antenna is not always efficient, why efficiency is more important than perfection, and how some radiation patterns determine which directions your energy goes. A concept central to understanding why some stations outperform others. But first, I would like to go ahead and ask if we have any check-ins, questions, or comments at this time for the Thursday Information Net. This is 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, and I've been the first speaker for the TIN. I am now asking for any check-ins, questions, or comments at this time.
Hotel America, K2HA.
K2 Delta Yankee.
Okay, this is 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, and I recognize K2HA, that is Fred, and VK2DY, Robert. So, we'll go ahead and speak first of all to Fred, K2HA. What have you got to say for us today? Go ahead, from 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel.
Very good, this is K2HA. Thank you, Declan. Peace and blessings to you, to everybody on the net, and everybody who's listening to this podcast. You know, it would really would be kind of delightful if we had some formula that would be able to take all the surrounding items that could be around, like tree branches, chimneys, the ground, and everything like that. And so you could just plug in and see how that would affect the antenna. Maybe there is one out there. I'm just wondering. Thank you for hosting and doing the narration of the script, and you're doing a fine job. Back to you, Declan. This is Fred, K2HA.
Well, thank you very much, Fred, from 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Well, I must say, personally myself, I am not 100% sure. It seems as if I am learning along the way, just like you guys who are listening to this next. So, I'm not exactly sure yet, but who knows? If it does exist, we'll probably find out about it. But yeah, thank you very much for the compliment there, Fred. I greatly appreciate it, and I greatly appreciate you coming in here today and checking in to give your comments from the first portion of the TIN. Do you have anything further to add before I move along? K2HA from 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel.
2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Yes, Declan. You know, the comment that the environment around the antenna is very important is a great comment. Just like, for example, you can have a beverage antenna, which is very close to the ground, and it performs quite different. It's a great receiving antenna, but a terrible transmitting antenna. So, and that has the effect of the environment. So, very good point. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA. Peace and blessings.
Okay, thank you very much, Fred, from 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. And we go ahead and say 73 for now, and move along to VK2DY. That is, of course, Robert, who is down in Australia. Go ahead, and how are you doing, and what would you like to say for the net today?
Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel, this is VK2DY, Robert in Northwestern Sydney. It's currently 11:24 a.m. Friday morning here. Temperature is 26, which is 78 Fahrenheit, and the sky is cloudy. We've got about three or four days of rain coming up before the sun comes back, and then by the end of the week, next week, it should be back to summer sun. Anyway, other than that, the only thing I'd like to comment on is that all antennas are compromised, and understanding the compromise that you're making and understanding how that affects the antenna is the most important thing, because sometimes you have to make choices, and you have, in order to make a good choice on an antenna, you have to understand what your choices make. So I guess that's just my commentary. Everything's a compromise, and you need to understand what those compromises are and choose the best antenna for what you have available. VK2DY, back to them.
Yeah, okay, from 2 Whiskey 0 Kilo Yankee Hotel. Yeah, thanks very much, and I absolutely 100% agree with you there. Because, of course, every antenna has to be created with a compromise in mind, because you cannot optimize the every aspect of the antenna, because if it's strong for transmission, it will be more likely to be weaker for receiving, and vice versa, which would mean that you would need to find something that's somewhere in the middle that gives you the highest for transmission, while also giving you the highest you can for receive, which usually tends to balance out the same, which is slightly below either of their ultimate peaks for positioning. That's the sort of compromise you've got to make if you want a sort of system all around with the antenna. In terms of being able to transmit strongly and receive strongly, you would have to sort of make this sort of compromise. You'd have to make sure that they're about the same, I would think. And that would end up balancing things out a little bit below where their highest maximum potential is. But, yeah, thank you very much, and I greatly appreciate that. I think having an understanding of antennas really helps you go a long way in the world of antennas. I mean, that is a pretty obvious fact, but it has to be stated. But yeah, thank you very much. Do you have anything further at this moment before we go ahead and move along? VK2DY from 2 Whiskey 0, Kilo Yankee Hotel.
Whiskey 0, Kilo Yankee Hotel. I'm having trouble with my microphone at the moment, so I think that'll be it. Thank you, VK2DY.
Well, thank you very much there, Robert, and I greatly appreciate you coming in and checking in. I was going to say this evening, but of course it would be this morning for you because it's 11:24 a.m. In northwestern Sydney. So thank you very much, and I hope that you enjoy your day ahead of you and also the weekend when it comes as well, because that is now very close. So we'll break with VK2DY. And I am going to go ahead and make one more call for any check-ins, questions, or comments at this time for the Thursday Information Net Open Forum for the South Coast, Amateur Radio Service for January of 2026. Any further check-ins, questions, or comments before we hand over to the next narrator from 2 Whiskey 0, Kilo Yankee Hotel? Okay, nothing heard at this time, so I now would like to go ahead and pass the baton onwards to Dave Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima, who will be the next narrator for the Thursday Information Net. So, all stations stand by, need to do a little change over here, but the TIN will continue very, very shortly.
Okay, this is Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima. Thank you very much there, Declan, for the first part of the TIN this evening. Okay, now we're going to have a little chat about resonance, efficiency, and radiation. Now that we understand the antenna as a system that converts energy between circuits and space, it's time to discuss three concepts that are often confused, but are essential to every amateur operator: resonance, efficiency, and radiation. Now let's start with resonance. Resonance is the condition in which an antenna naturally supports oscillating current at a particular frequency. When an antenna is resonant, the energy delivered by the transmitter flows smoothly into the antenna with minimal reactive components, meaning the antenna doesn't act like a storage device that momentarily traps and returns energy. Resonance is often what hams first learn about because it's easy to measure with an SWR meter or antenna analyzer. A resonant antenna tunes up easily. It feels good, and that can be reassuring. But here is the first important point. Resonance does not guarantee efficiency. You can have an antenna that resonates perfectly at a frequency and still radiates very little energy. Energy may be lost in resistor components, loading coils, matching networks, or nearby materials. Resonance tells you that the antenna presents the correct impedance to the transmitter at a given frequency. It does not tell you how much of that power is actually leaving the antenna as radio waves. Now this brings us to efficiency, which is arguably the most important characteristic of any antenna. Efficiency describes the proportion of power delivered to the antenna that actually becomes radiated energy. If only half of your transmitter's output is radiated and the other half is lost as heat, your station will perform as though you are running a lower power transmitter. Efficiency is affected by conductor material, antenna design, the surrounding environment, and ground interaction. It is affected by everything from the antenna's wire gauge to moisture in the ground beneath it. Now, even small changes can make large differences in efficiency. A poorly connected feed line, a corroded connector, or an antenna installed too close to the trees or metal structures can reduce efficiency significantly. Conversely, a simple improvement, raising an antenna, improving the ground system, or eliminating nearby conductive objects can yield remarkable performance gains without touching the transmitter itself. Now the first critical concept is radiation, or the pattern of energy distribution in space. Even an efficient resonant antenna does not radiate energy equally in all directions. the shape of the antenna, and its height above the ground determine the directions and angles at which energy is sent. A horizontal dipole at low height radiates primarily upward, favoring local contacts. The same dipole raised higher flattens the radiation lobes, sending energy farther along the horizon and favoring long-distance communications. Vertical antennas interact differently with the Earth. A quarter-way vertical relies on the ground to complete its image and shape its pattern. Good ground systems lower radiation angles and improve efficiency. Poor grounds raise angles and reduce effectiveness. The environment is always part of the antenna system. Metal fences, buildings, and even the feed line itself can distort the radiation pattern, sometimes in subtle but significant ways. It is also crucial to understand gain. Gain does not create energy. Gain simply redistributes energy from one direction to another. A directional antenna concentrates more power in a specific direction at the expense of others. This is why a beam antenna aimed at Europe will outperform an omnidirectional wire on the same frequency. Even if the wire is resonant and efficient, the difference is not more energy, it is the energy focus where it is most useful. Operators sometimes obsess over tuning the perfect SWR or achieving resonance to the nearest kilohertz. While these are worthwhile goals for protecting equipment and avoiding unnecessary losses, they are secondary to efficiency and radiation. An antenna that is slightly off-resonant but well-placed and efficient outperforms one that tunes perfectly but radiates poorly. Another critical insight is bandwidth. Resonance is inherently narrow. Antennas are naturally selective, and their performance varies across a band. Efficiency and radiation patterns can change with frequency. Now, understanding this helps explain why some antennas perform well on one part of the band and less well on another, and why antenna design is often a compromise between desired bandwidth, physical constraints, and performance goals. In short, resonance tells you that your antenna will safely accept power from your transmitter. Efficiency tells you how much of that power will leave as useful radiation. Radiation patterns tell you where that energy goes. All three interact to determine how your station performs in the real world. Understanding these three elements gives you the framework to think critically about antennas. It explains why two stations that appear similar on paper can perform dramatically different, and why careful observation and experimentation often yield far greater improvements than simply increasing the transmitter power. In the next section, we will dive deeper into SWR, feed lines, and hidden losses, concepts that often confuse operators and yet have enormous practical implications for station performance. Okay, in this section, we move from the antenna itself to the systems that are connected to the radio. These are often overlooked or misunderstood, yet they are critical to performance. We will focus on SWR, feed lines, and the hidden losses that quietly rob your station of efficiency. First, let's define SWR, or standing wave ratio. SWR is a measure of how well the impedance of the antenna system matches the impedance of the transmitter and feed line. A perfect match minimizes reflections and also allows power to flow smoothly from the transmitter to the antenna. It is important to understand what SWR actually tells us and what it does not. SWR does not tell you how much energy your antenna radiates. It does not tell you whether your station will be heard clearly on the other side of the continent. It measures only the proportion of power reflected back towards the transmitter due to impedance mismatch. Now imagine a hose pipe connected to a water pump. SWR is like measuring the pressure buildup caused by a partial blockage. A high SWR signals that something is reflecting energy back, but it says nothing about whether the water actually reaches a garden effectively. Similarly, a low SWR indicates a good match, but it does not guarantee efficient radiation or sound signals on the air. Now let's consider feed lines. Coaxial cable, ladder line, or any transmission line is not lossless. Every cable has an inherent resistance that converts some of the RF energy into heat. Now this loss increases with frequency and with cable length. For example, a long run of RG58 on 20 meters may dissipate 20 to 30% of your power before it reaches the antenna. Higher quality cable reduces this, but no cable is perfect. Feedline losses interact with SWR in ways that many operators overlook. When an antenna presents a mismatch, reflected energy travels back down the feed line towards its transmitter. Now along the way, some of that reflected energy is dissipated as heat. The longer the feed line, the greater the loss caused by the reflection. And this is why a high SWR can be far more costly in a long lossy feed line than in a short low loss line. Consider an example. You have 100 watt transmitter and a 50 foot run of RG8X cable feeding a resonant antenna with an SWR of 1.5 to 1. The power loss in the feed line may be minimal, a few watts and hardly noticeable. Now imagine a 150 foot run of RG58 feeding the same antenna with an SWR of 2 to 1. The losses increase dramatically and much of your transmitter's power never reaches the antenna. If the antenna may be resonant and efficient, but the system as a whole is compromised. This is one of the reasons why feed line choice and placement are just as important as the antenna itself. Using low-loss cable and keeping lengths reasonable preserves power and ensures your antenna operates effectively. And another factor to consider is connectors and joints. Every connection point introduces a small amount of resistance and potential for reflection. Moisture, corrosion, or loose fittings increase these losses. A single compromised connector can reduce system efficiency as much as the several feet of lossy cable. Antenna tuners are another topic that deserves careful explanation. Many operators assume that using a tuner magically makes any antenna good. Well, this is not true. A tuner does not improve the antenna or increase radiated power. It simply presents a load to the transmitter that allows it to operate safely. The mismatch still exists somewhere in the system, often in the feed line. If the feed line is long or lossy, the tuner cannot recover the energy lost before the signal reaches the antenna itself. In short, the lesson here is that SWR, feed line, and system losses are interconnected. Fixing one component may not solve all problems. The goal is to understand where the losses occur, how they interact, and how to optimize the system as a whole. Finally, consider the practical implications for station operation. A well-matched low-loss system allows more energy to reach the antenna, resulting in stronger signals and better contacts. And conversely, obsessing over the perfect SWR reading while neglecting cable losses, connectors, or antenna efficiency often produces little real-world benefit. SWR and feedline losses are subtle factors. They don't usually produce obvious aha moments like raising an antenna or moving it to a better location, but they quietly determine how much of your effort actually becomes effective RF in the real world. Now, understanding them is a critical step in moving from an average station to an efficient, reliable station. Now, in the next section, we will be exploring receive performance, noise, and the real limiting factors in practical operation. We will see how antennas affect what your radio hears as much as what it transmits, and why reducing noise often produces bigger improvements than increasing power. But before I pass to Roger there, the chief, the W4RFJ will be your next narrator to go into more detail with those particular topics. I'm going to ask for any check-ins, questions, or comments at this time. This is W8SRL looking for check-ins to the TIN this evening. This is Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima. Any check-ins, questions, or comments at this present moment in time? Okay, hearing nobody at this present moment. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our next narrator, and that is Chief Whiskey 4, Romeo Foxtrot Juliet. It's all yours there, Chief, and go ahead, sir.
Okay, perfect. This is W4RFJ. The next section we're going to get into receive, performance, noise, and the real limiting factor. In the previous sections, we focused primarily on transmitting and how antennas convert energy from your radio into the air. Now we turn our attention to the other half of the equation, receiving. Many operators underestimate how critical receive performance is and how much the antenna determines what your radio can hear. The fundamental principle is simple. A radio can only process the signals that reach it. No amount of filtering, digital noise reduction, or sophisticated signal processing can compensate for a weak or poorly received signal. If the antenna delivers only a fraction of the energy passing through space, the radio has very little to work with. In that sense, receiving is often the limiting factor in station performance, even more than transmitting. Noise is the central challenge for receiving. Not all noise is created equal. Some noise comes from natural sources, the static of a thunderstorm, atmospheric background, or solar activity. But the majority of interference most of us contend with today is man-made. Switching power supplies, LED lighting, computers, home appliances, electric fences, and industrial equipment generate radio frequency interference across the bands. The antenna does not distinguish between these signals and noises. It collects everything. This is why antenna choice, placement, and orientation are so critical for receive performance. An antenna located near a noisy neighbor's power lines will pick up far more interference than the same antenna installed in a quiet location. Even if it is physically identical, sometimes a smaller or less perfect antenna in a quiet location will outperform a larger, more efficient antenna in a noisy environment. The concept of signal-to-noise ratio becomes central here. Even if your transmitted signal is strong, if the antenna is receiving excessive noise, the effective signal-to-noise ratio is poor. Improving this ratio can yield much more dramatic improvements than simply increasing transmitted power. Another factor is polarization. Noise sources often radiate in specific polarization. By changing the orientation of the receiving antenna, you can sometimes reduce unwanted noise while preserving your desired signal. This is particularly effective on VHF and UHF bands, where man-made noise tends to be vertically polarized. A horizontal antenna in these cases may reject a significant portion of the noise while still picking up the signals you want. Height always plays a role. Raising an antenna above the surrounding noise sources often reduces pickup of low-level interference. Even a few meters of additional height can improve clarity significantly. The effect may not be as dramatic as moving to a completely quiet location, but it is often easier and more practical. Antenna type is another consideration. Small loops, magnetic loops, or directional arrays often receive less noise than simple dipoles or verticals in noisy environments. These antennas can provide better reception even if their efficiency is slightly lower on transmit because the reduced noise allows the radio to copy signals more effectively. It is important to remember that receiving is not just passive. Your station interacts with the environment, and careful observation is critical. Pay attention to which directions bring in more interference, which times of day are noisier, and which bands are most affected. This knowledge allows you to make informed changes that improve both your transmit and receive capabilities. Finally, consider the practical implications for operating. Many operators immediately think of increasing transmitter power when contacts are difficult. While this can help in some cases, it does nothing to improve receive performance. In fact, a noisy receiving environment may render even a higher power signal almost useless. Improving the antenna system for noise reduction, better directionality, and optimal placement is often the most effective and cost-efficient approach. In summary, receive performance is determined almost entirely by the antenna and its environment. Radios can only process what is delivered to them. Noise dominates performance more than power, and small, deliberate changes to antenna placement, orientation, or type can yield transformative results. In the next section, we will examine antenna height, radiation angle, and how your signal propagates in the real world, exploring why the same antenna can behave very differently depending on its installation and surroundings. Antenna height, radiation angle, and propagation paths. In the previous sections, again, we explored the antenna's role in transmitting and receiving, and we examined how efficiency, resonance, and noise influence influence station performance. Now we will focus on antenna height and radiation angle, two factors that dramatically influence how far and in which directions your signals travel. Understanding these concepts is critical for both short range and long distance operation. Antenna height is one of the most easily overlooked, yet most impactful factors in station performance. Many operators focus on antenna type or transmitter power while keeping the antenna close to the ground. Unfortunately, low antennas often radiate much of their energy at high angles, favoring short-range propagation while making long-distance communication more difficult. To understand this, we need to introduce the concept of radiation angle. Radiation angle is the angle at which the main portion of your antenna's energy leaves the antenna relative to the horizon. A low horizontal wire, for instance, often radiates most of its energy upwards toward the sky. This energy may return to Earth nearby, producing strong local signals, but it will not efficiently propagate over long distances. As the antenna is raised, the main radiation lobes flatten, sending energy closer to the horizon. This change dramatically improves long-distance communication. Even modest increases in height, just a few meters above obstacles, can produce noticeable improvements. Many operators report that raising a dipole from 10 feet to 20 feet can completely change who they can work on the same frequency and at the same power level. Vertical antennas behave differently. A quarter wave vertical relies on the Earth to complete its electrical image, which shapes the radiation pattern. The ground system, whether it consists of radials, a conductive surface, or natural soil conductivity, directly affects both efficiency and radiation angle. Poor ground systems produce a higher angle radiation and reduced efficiency, while well-designed ground systems produce lower angles and more effective long-distance coverage. It is also important to understand that height interacts with the environment surrounding structures, trees, and terrain, and can reflect, absorb, or distort your signal. Raising an antenna above these nearby obstacles often reduces interactions, improving both efficiency and consistency of propagation. Radiation angle is closely tied to your operating goals. If your primary interest is local or regional contacts within a few tens of miles, a lower antenna may actually be preferable, as it naturally radiates at higher angles. For DX or long-haul communication, higher antennas with lower radiation angles are more effective. The key is to match the antenna height to your operational goals rather than assuming higher is always better. Another factor is directionality. Height interacts with the antenna's physical orientation to shape the three-dimensional pattern of radiated energy. A horizontal beam at 30 feet will have a different pattern than the same beam at 60 feet. Small adjustments in orientation or height can change coverage in subtle ways that are noticeable only on the air. Height also affects received performance. Just as higher antenna radiates more effectively toward the horizon, it also intercepts signals more efficiently from distant stations. Combined with reduced noise pickup from nearby sources, this often makes higher antennas perform dramatically better on receive, even if the antenna itself has not changed. Understanding radiation patterns allows operators to make intelligent decisions about placement. It explains why two seemingly identical antennas installed in different locations can have dramatically different results. It also explains why stations sometimes experience what seems like miraculous improvements simply by raising an existing antenna a few meters or adjusting its orientation slightly. Finally, consider practical constraints. Not every operator can install extremely tall antennas due to zoning, safety, or space limitations. Even modest improvements in height and placement can yield significant returns, making it important to prioritize incremental gains over idealized, unattainable solutions. In summary, antenna height and radiation angle are critical determinants of both transmit and receive performance. Understanding how your antenna interacts with the horizon, the terrain, and obstacles allows you to maximize the effectiveness of your station. Small adjustments can yield surprisingly large improvements, making this one of the most cost-effective ways to enhance station performance. In the next section, we will examine power myths, diminishing returns, and why focusing on antennas often outperforms simply increasing transmitter power. At this time, do we have any check-ins or any questions or comments for the net? This is W4RFJ. Wrong button. Let's try this again. I'm looking for check-ins, questions, or comments before we turn it over to the next narrator. This is W4RFJ.
Golf Mike Zero, Uniform Bravo, GM Zero, UEB. Graham here, Central Scotland. No comments, just listening and learning and enjoying the night.
Ah, Gareth, GM Zero, YUB. This is I think I got that right. Or UYB. I can't even read my Ys and my Us. Top of the evening, appreciate you checking in. You sure you don't have any questions?
No, sir, Ray. No real questions whatsoever. I'm just questioning my own call sign. It's Golf Mike Zero Uniform Bravo, UUB. But no problem at all. No, I'm just enjoying listening, and there we go. If I do have any questions, I will certainly jump in later. GM Zero, UUB, just listening. Thank you, sir.
Well, beat me like a red-headed stepchild. It's me. I can't even read my own writing. GM Zero, UUB, we got you in the log. Thank you very much for checking in. Let's break for check-ins. Kilo Echo 5, Alpha Lima Fox, the alien life form. Greg, are you available?
W4RFJ from KE5ALF. Yes, I am, Chief. And let me start my section off with power myths and diminishing returns. Up to this point, we have examined antennas, feed lines, noise, and radiation patterns. Now we address a topic that often occupies the thoughts of many operators, power. More specifically, the misconception that increasing transmitter power is the primary solution to all communication challenges. At first glance, this seems After all, more watts should mean a stronger signal, right? While it is true that higher power increases the absolute signal strength, the reality of radio propagation and signal or station efficiency makes this a more subtle issue than it might appear. Let's start with the basics. Doubling your transmitter power results in an increase of about 3 decibels at the receiving end. In practical terms, this is only a moderate improvement, roughly equivalent to moving your antenna a few feet higher or improving its orientation slightly. Most operators would not notice a dramatic change in signal reports or clarity with a 3 decibel increase, especially under noisy conditions. Considering the concept of diminishing returns, each increment increase in power produces a smaller and smaller improvements in efficient communication. A jump from 5 watts to 50 watts or from 100 to 500 watts produces notable distances in ideal conditions, but in real-world situations, which noise, interfaces, or poor antenna placement, the benefits of additional power are often far less expected. Here's a critical insight. Antenna improvement generally outperforms power increases. Raising a moderate dipole by 10 feet improves ground conductivity for vertical or reducing feed line loss can yield gains equivalent to many times the effect of increasing transmitter power. In other words, antennas amplify results more efficiently than electronics. Another factor is that higher power amplifies problems as well as solutions. More watts increase the likelihood of RF interference in your end or to your neighbors. High power operation can exacerbate problems with the feed line losses, mismatched SWR, and inefficient antennas. It can also create a few false sense of progress, making underlying efficiencies in your system rather than solving them. This is why operators who chase power without addressing antenna performance often hit a plateau. They spend more money, generate more heat, and experience more interface while achieving only marginal improvements in real-world context. In contrast, those who focus on antennas placement and efficiency often experience dramatic improvements with the same or even lower transmitted power. Let's illustrate this with a scenario. Imagine two stations on 20 meter. One is running 100 watts into a well-placed, efficient dipole 40 feet high with a clear takeoff angle towards the target. The other is running 500 watts into a low, lousy, vertical surrounded by trees and structures. Which station is more likely to make a long distance contact? In practice, the station with better antenna placement and efficiency often outperforms the lower or higher power station despite using only one-fifth of the power. The takeaway is clear. Power is not the solution. Antenna design and installation are. Transmitter wattage is easy to measure and satisfy the ego. Antenna performance, on the other hand, is subtle, interactive, and often invisible until properly optimized. It requires observation, patience, and experimentation, but the rewards are far greater and the improvements are permanent and repeatable. A final point on power, regulatory and practical limits exist for a reason. Amateur radio is not constant of watts alone. It is a discipline of knowledge, observation. Maximizing performance within those limits requires understanding the station as a complete system, not simply turning it up the dial on the transmitter. In summary, increasing transmitter power is rarely the most effective way to improve station performance. focus on antennas, feed lines, placement, and system efficiency. Learn to recognize diminishing returns and invest energy in changes that produce lasting improvements. Power has its place, but it is always secondary to thoughtful system management. In the next session, we will examine real-world studies, case studies, illustrating how small antennas may improve clever placement and attention to environmental factors often yield far better results than merely increasing transmitter power. Case study, real stations, real results. In the previous sections, we discussed theory, resonance, efficiency, radiation patterns, noise, height, and the limitations of power. In this section, we will turn theory into practice by examining real-world case studies. These examples illustrate how careful attention to details and strange station designs constantly outperforms mere transmitter power increases. Let's begin with a turbine fixed station. Imagine an operator with a modest HF rig running 100 watts into a 40-foot horizontal dipole mounted over a backyard. Initially, contacts are primarily local, within 50 to 100 miles. Reports indicate signals are strongly local, but long-distance communications is unreliable. Frustrated, the operator contemplates upgrading to 500 watts. Before doing so, however, the operator experiments with antenna height and orientation. The dipole is raised another 10 feet. Its feed line routed away from nearby metal fences, and minor adjustments are made to reduce proximity to overhead power lines. The results are striking. Suddenly, long-distance contacts become routine. DX stations that were previously inconsistent are now very workable. Signal reports improve, not because of increased power, but because the antenna is now more efficient and its radiation pattern favors the intended propagation path. Next, consider a mobile HF station. This station operates from a car with a simple whip antenna and a modest 50-watt rig. Mobile operators face unique challenges, limited antenna height, proximity to conductive surfaces, and consistently changing environment. Yet, careful attention to mounting, grounding, and tuning often yields surprisingly good results. By experimenting with whip length and placement on the vehicle roof, the operator can optimize radiation angles and reduce losses, achieving contacts over hundreds or even thousands of miles without ever exceeding 50 watts. Finally, consider the psychological effect. Operators who focus on power often become frustrated when conditions are poor, because they rely on brute force rather than understanding. Operators who focus on antennas and efficiency experience more consistent success and greater satisfaction because they learn to work with the station, not against it. The lessons from real stations is clear. Your antenna and its environment define your performance. Radio power and accessories support that foundation but cannot replace it. Success comes from observing, experimenting, and applying what you learn as a whole. In the next session, we will discuss systematic methods of improving existing stations, showing how careful observation and incremental changes can produce dramatic results without major expenditure or excessive power increases. Improving an existing station, its systematic approach. In previous sections, we've explored theory and real-world examples. Now we turn our attention to a structured, methodical approach for improving an existing station. The goal is to give operators a roadmap for maximizing performance without necessarily investing in higher power or completely replacing equipment. The first step in any improvement process is observation. A thorough assessment of your station and its performance is essential before making changes. This includes noting that which bands work well, which directions provide strong signals, and which times of day produce the best results. Keeping a log of signal reports received and sent, environmental conditions, and any observations of noise or interference. Next, examine your antenna system carefully. Start with placement and height. Even a small increase in height can dramatically change radiation angles and reduce noise pickup. Consider the surrounding environment. Are there metal structures, trees, or power lines nearby that could be affected? Performance? Small adjustments in distance, orientation, and placement can make surprisingly large differences. Evaluate feed lines and connectors. Coaxial or ladder time losses can reduce the affected power reaching the antenna, sometimes more than half in extreme cases. Check connectors for corrosion. Ensure proper soldering or crimping. And avoid sharp bends in cable runs. Consider upgrading to low-loss feed lines where feasible, but also understand that correct routing and secure connections can yield substantial gains even without new materials. Okay, that's it for my section. Is there any check-ins or questions or comments before I turn it over to the next narrator?
K2HA.
November 0, Sierra Tango Golf. Check-in, no comment.
K2HA from KE5ALF. Yeah, it's your turn, Fred.
KE5ALF, Greg, thank you very much. Yeah, connections. Well, you know, I just had a connection go bad. Been using it fine for many years, but all of a sudden it is not making good contact. I don't know what happened to it, but maybe, you know, unscrewing it and screwing it back and screwing it back and forth did it in. But not only the connections inside the shack, they check every now and then, but also outside, especially those that are exposed to weather. I have noticed that I need to go periodically, you know, year by year, and make sure that each one of those connections is solid and still in good shape. Okay, just... putting in a plug there for checking all the connections. This is Fred, K2HA.
K2HA from KE5ALF. Thank you very much for checking in, Fred. I appreciate it. Let's turn it over to NOS, N0STG. This is KE5ALF.
N0STG. Hey, I was just checking into the net, listening in, learning a lot, but I had no comment. Back to the net.
N0S, TG from KE5ALF. I appreciate it very much for you checking in. You have a great evening, sir. Come back anytime you would like to. Love to hear you again. Okay, this is KE5ALF, and I'm looking to see if there's any more check-ins or comments at this time before I turn it over to KB9EWG.
Hotel America.
KE5ALF to K2OHA. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, Al. Another point. In our club, we bought some new cable for field day. Good coax. and a high quality, but one of the links was bad. It was no good. So, you know, when you buy coax, make sure you check it out. Use an antenna analyzer and make sure that it is a good conductivity and doesn't have a high SWR. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
KE5ALF to K2HA. Thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it. And peace and blessings to you, and thank you for checking in, sir. Okay, at this time, I'm going to turn it over to KB9EWG. David, how are you doing, sir? It's your turn.
Well, thank you, Alf. Good evening to you and everybody else on South Cars, KB9EWG. Echo 2289 here, my South Cars number. And doing fine there, Alf, so thank you so much. And a nice job on your narration part there. Anyways, continuing on, next consider grounding and counterpoise systems, especially for vertical antennas. A poorly designed ground can increase radiation angles, reduce efficiency, and raise noise pickup. Adding radials, improving soil contact, or connecting existing radials more effectively often produces immediate measurable improvements in both transmit and receive performance. After observing and assessing, begin small incremental changes. Avoid the temptation to overhaul the entire station at once. Make one change at a time and monitor the results. For example, raise the antenna 5 feet and check reports, adjust up orientation slightly, and reassess the changes. Change the connector and then observe any improvements in SWR or received signal quality. This method approach, the methodical approach allows you to understand which changes produce real improvements and which do not. Noise reduction is another critical area. Many operators overlook simple measurements that can significantly improve performance. Disconnecting unnecessary electronics near the station, moving an antenna away from noisy devices, or installing chokes and filters can yield better signal-to-noise ratio than increasing power. Documentation and experimentation are essential. Keep a log of changes, conditions, and results. Over time, this record becomes a valuable resource for understanding your station's behavior and planning further improvements. Amateur radio is an interactive process. Even small, consistent improvements accumulate to produce a station that outperforms much more powerful but poorly optimized setups. Finally, consider operating habits as part of your systematic approach. To the most efficient station also depends on skills and awareness of the operator. Proper tuning, careful listening, and attention to propagation conditions amplify effects of any physical improvements. Antennas, feed lines, equipment work best in the hands of a thoughtful, attentive operator. In summary, improving an existing station is a combination of careful observation, methodical adjustments, and attention to the environment. Small, deliberate changes to antenna placement, height, feed lines, grounding, and noise management often produce greater improvements that significant investments in power or equipment. By following a systematic approach, operators gain deeper understanding of their station and can achieve more reliable, consistent, and enjoyable on-air performance. In the next section, we will explore philosophy of compromise antennas, understanding how every antenna design improves trade-offs, why accepting these limitations allows a more practical and effective operation. Okay, the philosophy of compromise antennas. As we approach the final stages in the presentation, it's important to discuss a concept that every amateur radio operator must accept. Every antenna is a compromise. No antenna design is perfect. Each involves a trade-off between size, efficiency, bandwidth, radiation pattern, cost, and practicality. Understanding this philosophy is essential for realistic expectations and effective station operation. Let's start with the size. Ideally, antennas are designed to be resonant at specific wavelengths, often corresponding to a half wave or quarter wavelength. Larger antennas generally provide better efficiency and lower radiation angles, but they are not always practical. Many operators face restrictions due to property size, zoning laws, or structural limitations. As a result, compromise must be made in shorter antennas, loaded designs, or multiple band traps may be used to achieve workable performance within the physical conditions. Next, efficiency versus convenience. An antenna that is highly efficient but difficult to install or maintain may not be practical for everyday use. For example, a 100-foot full-size dipole might perform beautifully, but it may be impossible to fit in a suburban backyard. A smaller, slightly less efficient antenna may allow you to operate more consistently and enjoyably. Accepting the small loss in efficiency in exchange for practicality is often the most effective way to compromise. Bandwidth is another area of trade-off. Some antennas designs provide excellent performance over a narrow frequency range, but perform poorly outside that range. Multi-band designs are trapped antennas sacrifice some performance, some efficiency, or simplicity to cover more bands. The operator must weigh the importance of broad coverage versus peak performance. There is no single correct answer, only what aligns with your goals, environment, and operating style. Radiation pattern is also a part of the compromise. Directional antennas can concentrate energy in a specific direction, improving performance toward distant stations there. But the cost of coverage in other directions, omnidirectional antennas provide uniform coverage but sacrifice gain. Any single direction operators must balance these factors depending on whether their goal is local communications or long distance DX or emergency preparedness. Compromise extends to installations and aesthetics. Some antennas are highly visible and may conflict with neighborhood or homeowner association rules. Others are simple, discrete, and designs that blend with the environment, but less efficient. In such cases, the operator must decide which is more important, maximum theoretical performance or practical usability. The philosophy of compromise encourages operators to think strategically. It shifts the focus on performance to optimize rather than chasing an ideal that may or may not exist there or be feasible. Operators evaluate trade-offs and make informed decisions that improve overall station performance. Small, well-chosen compromises can often produce better results than a next efficiency versus convenience. An antenna that is highly efficient but difficult to install. Another important aspect of this philosophy is patience and experimentation. Compromise does not mean setting up for subpar performance. It means understanding limitations, experimenting with constraints, and continuously learning a small adjustment to height, orientations, or feed line routing overcome a significant limitation without major expense or effort. Finally, the philosophy that compromise fosters deeper appreciation of the art of and science of amateur radio. By accepting no antennas is perfect, operators focus on learning, observing, and experimenting, skills that produce the far greater long-term satisfaction than chasing equipment and specifications alone. In summary, every antenna involves trade-offs in size, efficiency, bandwidth, radiation pattern, and practicality. Recognizing the accepting these compromises allows operators to make an informed decision, optimize their stations within real-world constraints, and achieve consistent, enjoyable performance. This mindset transforms frustration into curiosity, experimentation, and mastery. In the next final section, we will wrap up with closing thoughts and operating mindset, emphasizing how understanding antennas shapes the way that we approach amateur radio as a lifelong pursuit. So closing thoughts and mindset. We have now journeyed through the theory, practice, and philosophy of antennas, feed lines, efficiency, noise height, and power compromises. In the final chapter, we reflect on lessons learned and explore how understanding antennas shapes not just our station, but our approach to amateur radio itself. At its core, amateur radio is a system-based pursuit. It is not simply a matter of purchasing a radio and turning it up to power. Success emerges from understanding how the components of the station, the radio, feed line, antenna, and environment and operator interact. Among these, the antenna plays a pivotal role. It is the bridge between your station and the world beyond your shack. Understanding antennas changes the way operators who grasp the concept think in terms of system performance rather than isolated specifications. They notice how minor adjustments in height, orientation of, or placement of in, influence the both transmit and receive performance. They consider environmental factors, noise and propagation paths. They approach operating not as a battle of power or equipment, but as an art of observation, adaptation, and experimentation. The mindset also fosters patience, persistence. Antennas rarely produce instant results. Improvements are often incremental, observable, and over hours, days, or even weeks, the operator who methodically tests, observes, and records changes gains knowledge. The last, that lasts far beyond the any signal, single contact. Each adjustment teaches a lesson about how radio waves interact with space, objects, and conditions that change from moment to moment. Moreover, a system focused mindset encourages curiosity, experimentation, rather than chasing the newest transceiver or highest wattage operators. Explore antenna types, placement, configurations. They try small and expensive modifications, document the results, refine understanding this interactive approach. It is not only effective, it is deeply satisfying. Amateur radio becomes not just a hobby, but a continuous learning experience. Noise management, efficient feed lines, proper grounding, and careful attention to height placement all contribute to this approach by focusing on the areas. Operators often achieve far more real-world performance than relying on power alone. The operator becomes a student of the airwaves, learning to work with the environment rather than fighting against it. Finally, embracing the mindset instills realistic expectations. There is no single perfect antenna and no universal formula for guaranteed performance. Every station involves compromise in size, efficiency, pattern, and practicality. Recovering and accepting this, recognizing and accepting these limitations allows operators to focus on what can be controlled and improved, leading to more consistent, satisfying results. In summary, the ultimate lesson that is that amateur radio is much more thinking and observing as it is about the transmitting. Antennas define the station, the radio interprets the signals, power is often secondary, noise and environment are critical, and the operator, through careful observation, experimentation, and adaptation, brings the system to life. Approach your station as a living system. Observe carefully, experiment thoughtfully, accept compromises wisely, and above all, enjoy the process of learning, communicating across the airways. Thank you for listening. We hope this presentation has provided insight, practical guidance, and inspiration for your continued journey in amateur radio. Remember, antennas is not just a piece of metal or wire. It is the heart of your station, and understanding that it changes it, everything. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are now heading to close this evening's net. Are there any final check-ins or questions for Danette? So come now, please. Okay, hearing nothing there. If anybody has any suggestions for a topic for Thursday Information Net, please email us at VOIP@scarsvoip.com. That's VOIP@scarsvoip.com. This has been SCARS, VOIP, net schedules and general information may be found on our website. That's scarsvoip.com. That's SCARSVOIP.com. This is David, KV9EWG, saying good night, 7-3, to one and all, returning the service to normal amateur use. KV9EWG is now clear.